This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 204, sponsored by InStock Trades and iFanboy members like you. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 204. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And sitting in for a globe-trotting, vacationing Ron Richards is one of our writers, Mike Romo.
Why, hello, everybody.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Good morning.
You're a bit of a globe-trotter yourself.
I'm coastal trotter.
That sounds like a disease I don't want.
It does. My coastal trotter just aches, so I'm going in on Monday.
It's either a disease or a horse. At iFanboy.com, we like comics. We read comics. Every week, we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one, writes about it on the website. We talk about it in this here podcast, along with various other topics of comic book interest. And before we get to the show, we'd like to remind you, with a quick reminder warning, that this is a review show. So we talk about the books of the week. We talk about the plots, the spoilers, all kinds of things that happen. So if you haven't read your books yet, pause the show, come back. You'll be happier for it. You'll be more serene. There'll be less stress in your life and in ours as well. Josh, yep. You had the sorry job of making this pick of the week.
Rough pick here.
I didn't have a lot to choose from. No. I think I read like 7 books this week, and that used to get me by, but this time it was just way too much pressure. I was like, oh.
There was nothing there.
There wasn't a lot to deal with either. No. I mean, there was some good stuff, but on the whole, it was very lackluster.
Yeah, you could read a good book and just be like, oh, it's pretty good, but it wasn't pick good, you know?
There was a lot of pretty good books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. They all moved the story along. This is sort of a filler. This is like, okay, we're still here. We're still publishing comics.
However, none of this is to take away from G.I. No. Joe Cobra Special Number 1, which was there was a 4-issue miniseries of G.I. Joe Cobra. Safe to say, one of, if not the best miniseries of the past year.
2 of the 4 were picks of the week.
And then this one, so 3 out of 5 total issues. Previously, Christos Gage was a co-writer along with Mike Costa. This time it was Mike Costa all on his own with Antonio Fuso on art, meaning he did everything on it, I believe.
Yes.
This was a great issue the first time I read it, and then upon further inspection, going back and looking at it, I realized like this was an amazing issue. This is like one of the best issues of the year.
Well, it's funny because I changed my rating on this book 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
First time I read it, I gave it a 5-star on iFanboy, and I really it was mostly for the construction of the which we'll get to. Then I thought about it. And I thought, well, the story was kind of thin, so I went back and changed it to a 4. Mm-hmm. And then I read it again. And I went, no, it's a 5.
That's very much what it was like. And afterwards, like, that was pretty good. And then I started going back through. I started noticing the symmetry because I don't tend to notice that stuff as I'm reading it because I'm just sort of into what's going on. And then
you're immersed in the story.
Yeah, and then I saw what was happening. I saw that it was actually a complete mirror bookend of itself, and I thought, that is badass. So here's what we're looking at. At the end of the G.I. Joe Cobra story miniseries, This is tough because I know people were waiting for it in trade, but I'm going to tell you what happened, so be warned. At the end of it, you learn that the contact for Chuckles the whole time, who we didn't really know who he was a mysterious Mr. X or something like that, was actually Zaymot of the Cobra Twins, Tomax.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how you felt about these characters when you were a kid, but I never really liked them because I thought they were silly.
Yeah, I cracked up at your review because they were kind of creepy.
They were creepy. They were like a feat, and you always thought, are they a little too close? Is that what's going on with these brothers? And they finished each other's sentences, and they didn't do anything. Like, they were like acrobats. I wanted, like, you know, specialized weapons and things like that. With my Cobra villains, that's what I wanted. They were like industrialists. When I was a kid, this is stupid.
This is boring.
But
yeah.
They sold the hell out of it in G.I. Joe Cobra. And for this one, it goes in, and it like, the first half of it is Tomax talking about how they're like it starts and there's a shot of them getting ready at opposite mirrors.
Right.
The two brothers are sort of dressing themselves, and it goes through Tomax's story of their up and coming, you know, and what they went through, and they were in the Foreign Legion with silly hats, and then at a certain point it switches in the middle, and it's Zaymot telling his story, and as he does it, what he's doing is he's describing how he's different than his brother, just sort of slowly. And the reveal at the end is that the stuff that happened at the end of G.I. Joe Cobra changed him, and he starts shaving his hair off so that he looks different than his brother. And it's this really neat way to take those characters. And since most people who are reading this probably has an understanding of who they are, they can go from there. They don't have to establish them. So they can just go ahead and start exploring the characters right away. And it was just done so elegantly, and the more that I looked at it, the more that I flipped through it, and when I was writing the review, the more impressed I was. And it was really a feat of comic book skill and comic book making. The more I looked at it, the better it got. So it was pretty easy to choose as a pick this week for me. I think most of the people who read it would have been along the same lines, or at least understood. You know, it's a damn fine.
Just from a construction standpoint alone, even though the story was good, just from the idea that this was a mirror image book and it changed in the middle and it swaps characters, and you really had to pay attention to even realize that that's what was happening was better than anything else that was out this week.
It was fantastic for a reread. I mean, really lent itself to looking through it again.
This demanded a reread because it's sort of at the end, you sort of realize that the framing, you know, the narrative has changed colors, has switched positions. And you're like, wait, something happened And it was so subtle. Like when I first read it, I'm like, ah, it's a nice narrative. But then as you realize what the artist actually did, what the writer was doing, you go, well, wait, I need to sort of see this all over again. Because this is so different than any other book this week. I would argue it's different than most of the books I've read this year.
Sure.
That it's sort of like, okay, well, because I'm coming into this cold. I mean, I remember these guys from the cartoon, but I haven't been reading the book.
So this is the first issue of it that you read.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think one of the other shows we did a G.I. Joe book, and but this was like, this totally surprised me. I'm really curious to see where they go. Give me some context here. Are these guys going to be now major characters, or is this just like a window into these two specific guys? We'll get to them later.
We don't have too much to go on. There was basically there's the three G.I. Joe series going on. One of them's Origins, so that's happening in the past, and the other one is G.I. Joe.
Although it's sort of caught up to the book.
Yeah. G.I. Joe book. Then there's this the regular G.I. Joe series, and these don't seem to have much to do with one another.
But I want to see the results. I mean, of this transition.
G.I. Joe Cobra 2, the second one, I know is being worked on right now. So okay. There's going to be another mini series after this.
But Mike, you should pick up the trade for this when this comes out. People on the site ask, can I read this? I don't really know anything about G.I. Joe. And I think absolutely you can read this miniseries because it is – we talked about it the last two times they were picked. It's very un-G.I. Joe-like, which is not it's not a selling point for me. Not that it's bad to be G.I. Joe-like, but you don't have to know anything about G.I. Joe to know about this – to enjoy this series.
You don't have to think that you have to like G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Right.
Just it's good comics. That's enough. That's the sentence. There's no qualifications. Exactly.
Or just espionage. It's a good espionage comic.
Yeah, I think what happens is you see the logo and you're like, oh, it's another property. And you guys talked about this in the show before. But this is much more meditative than I would have expected from any of these books. And can we just talk a little bit about the art? Who is this guy? this guy is awesome.
When I was Antonio Fuso, when I was writing about this, I was trying to figure out what it was that I liked about it because he's not Jim Lee. He's not Dale Eaglesham. He's not blowing you away with two-page spreads and perspective shots and things like that. But what I realized that he did was he captured a tone.
Yeah. He's very gritty. We say that
perfectly.
A lot. But
it's the palette, too, the colors, too.
Yeah, his art is texture. There's like this dirty texture to it, which is perfect for what the story is.
And you can feel just sort of where the pacing and the mood for the story is all in this, and it's very murky and it's very not in a bad way and it's just subdued in that like tense way and it's really completely perfect and appropriate, and again, not anything like you would expect in a book that has that logo on the cover.
And it's also the kind of story that could only be done in comics. You couldn't do this in a narrative book, like a prose book.
Excellent point.
You couldn't do this in a cartoon. You couldn't do it in a movie. This is only something that could be done in this form. So I think it's this 24-hour comic day. So I think this is like one of those things that this is one of the reasons why comics are so special.
Was I the only person hoping they'd show up in their outfits at the end?
Yes.
I kind of was.
Yeah, you totally were.
Showing up in their G.I. Joe outfits, buying all the real estate in Manhattan, because that's what those fucking people do.
Well, one of the other things I really liked about it was I liked the bit where they sort of talked about, you know, where they went from being militant and violent to figuring out what their actual goals were, and like sort of getting into the mind of the dictator or the terrorist or whatever it is, the guy who does bad.
The terrorist who becomes, you know, the big time terrorist. Not just the foot soldier, but the guy who becomes in charge and has lots of money, and then your goals change.
Well, I like the idea of like now we live in an age, this is a quote, we live in an age where resolutions are more profitable than conflicts. It's such a reversal. Instead of trying to take over the world, they figure out ways to like improve infrastructure, and they make money from all the stuff that with that kind of business.
I actually really liked the exploration that the words that were in it, and the way, you know, there was an exploration of the idea of slavery versus freedom.
Right.
And how that affects things and how they're dealing with that. And I was quite poetic and really well written. It was well crafted in all sorts of different ways. So no doubts on this one. This would have been a pick of the week on a really strong week too.
Yeah, no, it was a great book. Amongst a book a week full of a bunch of very good but not great books, this was a great book, no matter what.
Now, did you folks read Die Hard Year One Number One?
I did.
I read it.
And I loved it.
I liked it a lot. I was really surprised that this, when I read it, I'm like, this is not about the Die Hard guy. And then it is about the diehard guy.
John McClane.
McClane.
And it's funny to see, oh, young John McClane. Like, it's just funny the characterization, how they drew his face. It does look just like him from Moonlighting. So
it was, there's lots of reference.
Yeah. I actually really liked it. The art reminded me of that sort of computer-generated stuff that we've seen it before in 1984 or the 85 or 86, whatever the year was. Whatever, you know what I mean?
You mean Marvel 1985?
That one.
Okay. you're just listing years. It's like this. It's
just
like
tell me when to stop.
You read in 87, 88.
82, 83. Am I getting closer? anybody want to frame this book? Did anybody know that this book was coming?
No, I didn't know it until we had it on our pull list, and I didn't know.
I got a couple of pages into it, and I thought, well, Connor's happy somewhere right now. I know that much. Why don't you tell him what it is?
This is Die Hard Year One, so it's John McClane's first year as a cop in New York City in 1976. He's of course the title character from the Die Hard movie series, which I love. And my favorite thing about this book was Howard Chaykin was the writer, and he's from Newark, New Jersey, and he's born in the 50s. And in the 70s, he was in his, you know, he was in his 20s and working in Marvel Comics. So he's probably
fine choice. That's
probably living either living in New York or spending lots of time there. And he really did a good job of capturing the feel of the New York City in the late 70s when it was an urban hellhole that people think it still is, which it isn't. But it was a dangerous, dirty place you didn't want to be unless you had to. And they did a really good job of capturing that.
I felt it like the art also captured that oppressive heat in July, like just how beat down you feel during those days. There's that great full page spread of what everybody's in their 1976 regalia, and people are just dirty and just hot.
Yeah, everyone's miserable. There was nothing good about that time period, and they did a really good job of capturing that. It's a very sort of hard boiled book. Yeah. And Chaykin's great for that because it fits the time period very well.
What's great also too is that Willis's character is not. I mean, you get him, but there's all this other stuff going on. It really is a really nice first issue where you see some key characters. We get elements of a struggle, elements of the what we're going to see. But then that's it. So it's just enough to keep you going.
I had to go back through it and figure out where it was that McClane was, because I sort of lost track of who was who.
Mm-hmm.
I was easily able to tell when I went back, but I was ending up paying more attention to that other story, like the cop who hit his
two
grave
cops.
And guys. So like then I was like, well, wait, what did McClane do in this? And I went back and I saw that, you know, he'd gotten the mugger and he'd done that whole thing. I think that I considered this for the pick of the week for just a little bit, but I decided in the end, like, I just had wanted a little more story. Like, it was a cold open, basically.
A classic first episode where you're just like, okay, I don't really know, but I like it enough. But I do have a question. Mm-hmm. In 1976, did they really have phones like that car phone? I don't think they did. I'm just on the record here. He's holding up that huge-ass car phone, and I don't remember those, and I was alive. At that point,
Connor and I wouldn't know because we were not alive.
Yeah, I don't want to hear it. Continuity issues aside,
I think they probably did. I wouldn't imagine
they were really expensive, though.
Yeah, he was a super rich guy. I mean, did you see his where he was living?
Yeah, he had a really nice
view of the park. Too. So probably.
That was a great scene, by the way. That set up their relationship in two panels, basically. You know, I don't believe in divorce, and if you do, you know, you'll be found raped, dead, and mutilated. But I love you. I'm trying to make you happy.
I like the sad sack criminal who's like lives out on Long Island and then has to con everybody. That was my favorite. It was just such a. It was like a 70s cop movie. And,
yeah, it was very atmospheric. Very atmospheric.
That's perfect.
And great covers. Three covers: one by John Paul Leone, one from Jock, and one from Dave Johnson.
The Jock one was sick.
I love Jock. That was one of the best covers of the week on iFanboy.
But I think it's notable that the first thing we leap to is really the different characters. And I think in the amount of time that they had to make this story happen, I think that we're already remembering three sets of characters so clearly bodes well for the rest of the book.
He was fairly efficient in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised. I really was surprised how good this was.
You know, we're seeing a resurgence of good licensed properties.
Yep.
And it's fun because it used to be very easy, you know, five, six years ago, to just see a licensed property and be like, no, thank you.
Right.
You know, and now that's not such a gimme.
I wonder about the timing of this book, though. It seems to come way out of left field. I mean, is there a new Die Hard movie coming out? I mean, am I just being cynical?
There hasn't been one since the Sam Jackson one.
Right. Since the one about the bomber.
Yeah.
Right.
I think this would be awesome, sort of like a Die Hard prequel. Like if you could have McClane.
You know how creepy that would be? You'd have to.
Well, you would, yeah.
If you saw the circuits, you'd know they could do it. It would just look really creepy.
I heard it looks really uncomfortable. But it's such a, I mean, we don't have a lot of shows. I know this is another topic for another show, but we don't have a lot of like gritty 70s shows, really. I mean, I guess they had that time traveling show.
Life on Mars, which.
Yeah. I actually like that movie.
No, I liked it as well, but it didn't do well. So.
Yeah.
Marvel Divas number 3 came out, and I actually really like this miniseries. This was really surprising because it's not at all what you'd expect it to be based on the title and the you know, just from what you see four female characters on the cover, and originally had a J. Scott Campbell cover, and it's really actually a very it's not at all cheesecakey, and the art is very cool, and it's actually been a very sort of somber mini. The whole idea is that these three best friends, Black Cat, Firestorm, Hellcat, and the old Captain Marvel character, are best friends in New York City, and Firestorm has cancer.
Yeah, it's heavy. I was trying to figure out who this book was for. Like when I first thought of it, oh, it's trying to get girls to read comics or whatever. But then I realized it's just for people who have a history with these characters. This one really touched me. My friend actually had cancer and went through all this, and she's fine now. But this really, toward the middle of it, when she's getting chemo and having to deal with the wigs, I was like, wow, this is pretty serious.
Yeah, I've had similar experiences with people who I know with cancer, and it was really sort of emotionally wrenching issue.
Yeah.
It was kind of tough to read.
Yeah. I remember really liking – when I realized, you know, Spider-Man, The Amazing Friends, I was like, wow, this is kind of heavy. I really liked Firestorm. She's got this cancer thing, and just her sort of doing this transition and her friends trying to be supportive but not really knowing how I don't think I've ever seen this really sort of examined in this way, and the art is really gorgeous, I think.
Tonsi Zonjic or Zonic, never heard of him, but he's a great artist, or her, whoever
this way, person is. Either way, Croatian, so who knows?
Either way, that person could kick my ass. Right. it was one of the more – I picked it up on a whim. I remember the first issue and just to see what it was, and – this is one of the more surprising issues, and it's been a really it's not about in the first issue people thought it was about like it was Sex in the City, and but it wasn't.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
A setup for this big fall, which you took in the second issue, which was Felicia has cancer, and not Felicia, what's her name?
Is it Angelica? Is it
Angelica has cancer?
Angelica.
I was looking at her. Angelica has cancer, and then fallout from that, and from her powers, and then trying to heal her, and at the end of this issue. Hellcat's presented with basically a deal with the devil, which is, I know it's touchy in Marvel, but she can save Angelica if she agrees to do something. And
Hellcat, there's at least a reason for that,
right? Well, it's her ex-boyfriend, so it's not like
But the idea is like, you know, let's just spend one night together and she'll be healed. But in hell, one night lasts forever. So it's a nice way to end. It's a great hook for the third book of four. And
if you like, I mean, it's not at all cheesecake. It's not at all exploitative. It's not at all annoying. You know, it's actually a really strong emotional issue. And it's been a really strong emotional miniseries too.
It's a good inverse to the Gotham City Sirens, which also came out this week, which is much more what you would expect. You know, three girls, you know, they're doing their own adventures and stuff. And this has really been completely the opposite.
Sisters are doing it on their own.
They are doing it completely on their own.
I see. That's fantastic. So one of my favorite games to play is Let's Upset Green Lantern Fans.
Ooh.
I don't know if you guys have
ding,
noticed,
ding, ding,
but I'm doing it on purpose. Specifically to upset whoever it is that is upset.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. Green Lantern number 46 was out this week. It was another issue.
The things with these issues is they're all solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's nothing bad about them. It's just that they're not. I don't think they're great. They're very good. You know, they're all four star books.
It's just such a chowder of stuff going on. I'm having a hard time remembering which book I had read last. You know, I always have to warm up a few pages in.
Yeah,
I feel like, is that Alzheimer's or is that just Is that the Blackest Night, my memory?
I do feel like a lot of people are reacting to moments a lot stronger than I am. Like in this one, I see a lot of reaction to the two bodies in the lantern. That was in this one, right? Or am I kidding?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when they thawed out, right?
Right. But the thing was, like, they just got killed a couple of issues ago. So it's not
There's been
a lot of time to process or, like, feel like the loss so that the return isn't that big of a deal. I thought that the strongest thing about this issue was Sinestro's ascension at the end. But I have a hard time with it thematically. I think it's good to see Sinestro take over his core and get rid of Mongol, and I was happy about that. But on the other hand, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like having Sinestro work with Hal has got to be a little more difficult than it has been. I feel like they haven't really told the story, but they have to. But I feel like there should be more hatred between them, or more, you know, animosity. I feel like we've got to move through the story so fast that we've kind of got to get around that. Hal's very much accepting everything that's going on around him as a matter of course. Carol, back in the thing. Sinestro, you're here. You know, like.
He's not even. He's barely in this book. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just sort of he tags along with Sinestro and everybody else. I just get I get confused who Amon is, and then I remember, obviously I know Abin. It's just a lot of names that sound sort of similar, and I kind of forgot about the Mongol thing, and I was just sort of confused. The art was great, as usual.
There's just a lot going on, and so it's hard to pick out a thing to be like, this was great, because it's almost like the Sinestro Core War. It's such a sensory overload the whole time.
I just felt this was a little bit of a red herring. I mean, it's like you have this whole battle between Mongol and Sinestro. And it's like, yeah, so what? I mean, okay, I guess that's important that we see this transition, but I never really thought of them as the Mongol core.
Well, have you been reading Green Lantern Corps? Because that's where
But I mean, it's just like, I don't know.
The thing is, it's interesting because it's a heroic win, except he's not a hero. So you're left with mixed feelings on how to feel about it.
Yeah,
like he's a bad guy, so he won. What does this mean for us? Well, we're still ankle deep in shit,
right?
You know, so you haven't gone anywhere from that. You just got that other story out of the way, I guess.
I think we're still in setup mode, it's been a while. We're still in the opening scenes of this story, which is they're still the dead are still rising, and they're still dealing with that. They don't really know what's going on.
They've turned the corner of how to deal with them in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is actually we can see how to beat them, but there were some really good scenes. I mean, I love the scene of all the dead lanterns coming out of that one mushy guy, Slush. That was great. I think, is that really happening? That's awesome.
I think one of the things about the Black Lantern Corps that I'm having a hard time with is that there's no focal point of a bad guy. They're zombies, so they're just these onrushing hordes, and I feel like every single issue has its own villain out of the Lantern Corps, but there isn't a central figure.
Well, that's the Black Hand,
or that Guardian,
I think the last page of this book sort of sums it up for me, where Sinestro's Arin, and then Lantern's like, Arin? Who the hell is Arin? I've been kind of like doing that, who the hell is that? For like a year now,
it is very much dependent on having read Green Lantern this whole time.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, and I am reading it.
Well, when they said who, that told me, well, good, I don't have to know who that is.
True.
You know, so like I knew the Abin Sur. Okay, I got that, and then I remembered as a that Amon Sur was part of. He was Abin Sur's son, and he was part of the Sinestro Corps, and he was pissed off. So that
Arin is Abin's sister, who Sinestro had a secret affair with, which was revealed recently. It was not a historical concept.
And it's not those were not the other couple that also came back from the dead that was in the lantern. I mean, you know, there's just a lot of love in this book, and I'm just trying to keep it. Khufu, right. Good old Khufu.
It's tough. To call it.
They need like a little cast of characters website.
Cards.
Yeah, you really do. But I guess the story is still going. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot going on here.
I'm going to get the hate mail for your agreeing with me, Mike.
You have the tattoo. You can just show them the tattoo. I don't have anything to back me up on.
I'm really enjoying it. For me, it's still very early on. It's still very similar to all the other ones that have come so far. So at this point, It's going to take a new kind of story dynamic to really wow me with the Black Lantern issue, just because
I'm really enjoying the Indigo Indigo Girls, Indigo Core, the compassion idea, that compassion's hard to find. I think that's really lovely, and I would love to see more of them because they look like they're badass.
I like how Mike can say things like that's really lovely.
Things like that. I'm sensitive in the morning.
No, then that's very nice, because these other two guys I work with, you're not going to hear that coming out of them.
Lovely. It's so lovely.
Lovely.
You know what is lovely is In Stock Trades, because they've got 37% off their books with free shipping of orders over $50. And they have over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order right now, with new releases listed every Wednesday. Actually, this was a big trade week. Actually, not so much an issue week. I had a lot of exciting trades that showed up.
Astonishing.
Your orders ship within 48 hours, and you can get that all at InStockTrades.com. The Astonishing X-Men Omnibus, the next Umbrella Academy Dallas book, a bunch of stuff.
That's a pick of the week right there.
I just picked up the polyp one, Mysterio's polyp. Man, that's just good.
I picked up a case of the polyp.
I have a polyp in my throat. I was like, it started getting larger every page I turned the book, but that's another show. Yes, good place to go.
Get Justice Society of America 31, and this is the third issue with Bill Willingham, Matt Sturgis writing. I didn't really like the last two, but I actually really liked this one.
Tell me how this book is going, guys. I've sort of dropped all of the Justice books for a while, so let me know.
I feel like they didn't really have a handle on the tone of the characters in the first couple. I think they're starting to find their feet now with this one. Mm-hmm. Josh, did you drop off this one, or is it just me?
I'm not feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
So much. I want to. It's not that it's bad. It's just, this is a shitload of characters. Mm-hmm. And I don't really like that usually. I tend to like that when I like it when Jeff Johns does it, but that's like an exception. And in this, I felt like there's a ton. I don't know. I'm not loving it. I really don't like Magog.
Right.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's in it.
It's really forcing him on me. And I kind of think that it will be interesting to go back to not having any of those all characters here.
Like, well, when they split, you can avoid the book that Magog's in.
I know, but it's by Sturgis, and I like Sturgis' stuff, but I don't like those characters.
Yeah, I don't like Magog either.
The other thing is, like, I feel like he became, like, in the beginning, he was the soldier guy who had the Halo sword.
Right.
And I don't understand why he's changed so much.
You mean personality-wise?
Yeah, because in the beginning, he was very, you know,
respectful of the older guys, and now he's like, you guys are stupid.
Yeah, which doesn't seem, it seems to sort of come from out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Why are they trying to talk him up so much? Is it like the century for DC? They're trying to make this new?
I think there's a thing coming up.
He's got a book coming up.
He does, but who cares? But
I think there's going to be a bigger event that has something to do with him. Like, it's going to be a big deal that he's around. Because if you remember, he was the bringer, you know, Magog is the reason that Kingdom Come happened. So you're going to bring him back and not do something with that? Like, he's the forebearer of something really horrible that's going to happen, I think.
Ugh.
But it's a ways away.
And Mr. Terrific died, maybe.
That was the other thing I didn't like. I love him. He's one of my favorite characters.
They killed Mr. Terrific?
Apparently. Maybe. It's the last page. He's dead!
Yeah, oh, so, well.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's not terrific at all.
Close up on the face.
No, he's my favorite character on that team, so I don't want him dead either.
I like Dr. Fate in this.
Yeah. I like Dr. Midnight in this.
Yeah. If you're a doctor, you're good.
Yeah.
They should have like a doctor like comic. The two docs. Doctor, like
an ER
doctor,
kind of show.
Like an ER, yeah.
Yeah.
But Midnight, like an offbeat comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, the Helmet of Naboo.
Stop turning the lights off. I know you're blind, but I'm not.
I was on the verge of dropping it with the last issue, but this one I actually didn't hate, so that was a good sign.
How long is this creative team doing that book?
Well, it's splitting into two series very soon.
And so is it like Justice So, and then the other one, Society of America?
Yes. Yeah. Well, the older members and the young, the conflict is that the younger members are getting fed up with the older ones, so they're going to split into an older.
So Willingham is going to do the older people, the red state members, and then the blue state members will be in the Justice League All Stars, which is the younger book written by Matt Sturgis. That political thing was a joke and is not real.
That's Justice League of America, 80-page giant. I picked up because, as I told my comic book guy, I'm just hungry for Justice League. And it's been so long, so I wanted to give this a shot. This was the issue written by a bunch of TV writers, which Josh will love.
Please tell me it was good.
It was fun. It was a throwback issue in that I remember as a kid reading a lot of the stories where you'd have that huge Justice League satellite team where there was like 48 members on it. And so you'd never have a story with all of them together, and you'd always end up, they'd always end up going on an adventure and pairing off. And that's what happened here, was they're fighting this sort of Time Lord, and they
Doctor Who.
And he sends them all, they fight him, you know, as with Time Lords, he sends them all off into different time periods to it in pairs. So like Green Lantern and Red Arrow end up in the Western, in a Western setting, and Wonder Woman and Steel end up with pirates. And it's just sort of like, it was a very much a throwback to that sort of out of continuity, one shot adventure where you don't worry about anything but what's happening on the page. And everybody has to deal with it, you know. John Stewart goes back to the King Arthur times. And he's all excited because he's a war history buff. So he makes himself into a green, you know, knight. And it's just, it was a fun, like a lot of snappy dialogue, different artists on every story, different writer on every story too. And the framing device was drawn by the guy who draws Dynamo 5.
Nice. Oh, Mahmoud Asrar.
Yep.
He's good.
Yeah, he is good.
He is good. Who are the TV writers?
There's not like a title page that everybody listed, but I saw the solicitation. It's a bunch of like fringe and hero people, I think.
Okay. Huh. So it's not like a bunch of guys from The Wire.
No, it's a bunch of like genre.
This is a Dennis Lehane written Green Arrow story. Excellent.
If that had happened, I would have told you.
Okay, good stuff. Now, Connor, you listed the cover of Astro City Astra Special, mm-hmm. number one, as one of your favorite of the week. And I would have probably said the opposite.
Me too. I didn't even know it was a comic book. I didn't pick it up because I didn't see the actual Astro City title. I had no idea what this was.
Yeah, I passed over it. I was looking for it, and I was like, "What's this? Get this magazine out of my way."
Exactly. I mean, good trick.
It was nicely done, I suppose. It looked That was good. The thing about this that we all learned is that Brent Anderson has no idea what young people look like or act like.
I'm so glad you said that. I'm like, these people look like they're in their 40s.
I was like, so they're graduating college, but she's dating this young Jewish lawyer.
Yeah, it was very bizarre. Astra is the character we've been following for the last couple of specials.
She's the kid in the first family, which is like the Fantastic Four of Astro City. And if you remember way back to the first series, she had an issue where she was a kid and she ran away to meet some other normal kids. And so it was, for one hand, really, really neat to see they like decided to grow the character up and have her, you know, age. And so that was really fun. But,
I like the character. And I think having reread all those books for the video show we did recently, mm-hmm. or recently-ish, helped because it had been a while and I probably wouldn't have had the same impact not having read those. But I like her a lot. It was nice to see she got to have a normal-ish life and graduate college. And it's just that I like Brent Anderson. It's just that it was funny. The art was, you know, there's some guys that we make fun of because obviously they haven't been around anyone younger than their own age in a long time. But
right.
Like this was really glaringly apparent in this issue.
This was like 1978. The glasses, her style.
She looked relatively young. She looked like age appropriate, but her college boyfriend looked like he was in his 40s, and it was just bizarre.
And he wore like a leather bomber jacket.
Yeah.
And it was the night they went to their graduation party, and he's got like a tie on. Like he just looks like Ben Urich.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly it.
And I was like, this is so wrong.
And not even cool Alex Maleev Ben Urich. Like
no.
Like no, Nebuchadnezzar the other Ben Urich. It was funny. Like it added a whole little layer of enjoyment that wasn't intended.
It was
me.
A yeah. good issue. Like it was yeah, a well written no, issue. And the art was even good, except for that.
Yeah.
I just could like it was so hard to be like I can't believe she's with me. Neither can we. You.
Join the club, pal.
Listen, also, Ira.
There's also a weird panel where he was holding his hand up and it was all out of proportion. Uh-huh. You know when it was when they met?
Oh, let's see.
It was when they met.
It's like a zombie hand that's dying in the background, in the foreground.
And they shake awkwardly, which it was just
My favorite is the group dance on the second page.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because kids dance like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, what were they doing? Like, they're all going to have to kiss.
I know. And then they're not wearing shoes.
It's like a modern dance concert.
It's like the Anteater dance from Can't Buy Me Love.
So is this the near future? Like, I don't understand.
This is now, I assume.
I don't. Yeah. Okay, and then she just has that device. I like the dynamic a lot. I thought the dialogue was really fun. I thought the characterizations. I don't really have a background with these characters at all.
You don't have to. That's the great part about it.
Yeah, this was really, really nice.
I think when he's – I haven't loved the Dark Ages one that he's been doing. But when he's not doing the Dark Ages, I think they've been as strong as they've ever been, the Astro City books. So the specials we've seen are the one-shots. And this one is one of the better ones I've read in a while.
Yeah.
Is it always this artist?
Yes. Yeah,
Brent Anderson's been the artist on it all along. You'll see a very big difference between the early issues and this. Some of that has to do with the fact that it's been 15, 20 years since then. So maybe he's – I don't want to say lost a step, but he's also inking himself now.
Interesting.
It wasn't at one point. Earlier on, somebody else was inking him, and it really made it nice and clean. So there may just be a style thing. Like when Derek Robertson inks himself, it looks very different than like it did in, say, Transmetropolitan.
It's trippy. It's got almost like this very pencil-y feeling to it, especially in the beginning, like the backgrounds and stuff. A lot of graphite.
Well, I had thought that he was doing that in the Dark Ages for a reason.
Mm.
It does not.
Maybe that's not. That's just a style. I think after this show's over, we should do the dance.
I am doing it now.
It was nice.
They're like, crouched over, hands behind them, faces together, and then they pop up with their arms out. It's very, very bizarre.
They're like a team.
And I don't know why they don't know that guy's a narc. Hey, dudes, what is going on? I thought we could go to the Rick Springfield show later. What?
Do you have any spliffs?
I mean, a rapper.
Rick? I thought she was dating a professor at first.
Yeah.
Very strange. So those are the books. It was a very light week for books, and those ones we wanted to talk about. But there's other books to talk about and other people to talk about them. So if you go to ifanboy.com, you can make your pull list. You can rate and review books. You can also write user reviews, and we like to highlight some of those user reviews here on the show. And our first one is from Jim Billy 4, who reviewed Bad Dog number 3 and gave a story of 4 out of 5, and the art a 5 out of 5. And at the time of recording, 1.1% of the iFan base made it their pick of the week. And Jim Billy 4 says, "This book is just a boatload of fun. Kelly does a fantastic job of making these ridiculous characters, a werewolf with a drinking problem and a filth-spewing dwarf, really come to life. In the middle of action and horror-inspired storylines with people being literally torn asunder, the main duo come across as both charming and warm with a deep affection for each other. That is an impressive balancing act that probably could not have been pulled off without the art from Greco, who does quite an admirable job of putting an entire complex range of emotions in the face of a dog. Luckily, dogs have eyebrows to work with."
I was really surprised by this book.
Have you been reading it all?
No, not at all. In fact, I thought this could have been an issue number one. Like, it really,
yeah,
it set it up really nicely.
It's been a long time since the last one came out.
This is the downfall of this series, is that it's taken Greco an enormously long time to draw the issues.
It's gorgeous.
Between them. And draw color, you know, he does it all. Yeah, absolutely. I've liked this all along, and this was maybe the strongest of the issues so far. He said, you know, Kelly has said that this is his ode to Preacher style Garth Ennis work, and it's obvious there. In fact, I'd say it's doing a better job of that than, say, a book like The Boys is, because it is, you know, trashy and there's swearing and gross stuff and everything, but there is a heart there through the whole thing. And like, I really love the main character.
I didn't know anything about the zombies stuff, so I thought they were actually going to get like illegals crossing the border. I'm like, what kind of book is this?
Yeah.
But then when it opened up on the zombies, I'm like, this book is awesome. They totally had me fooled.
Basically, what it is the wolf. I don't know why I can't remember his name right now. He goes to meet his friend, and they look like they're going to be Minutemen, like they're going to stop illegals from crossing the border. And you're like, this is weird. And then it turns out that what it is they're smuggling vampires across the border. So they kill all the vampires. And then something happens at the end that I didn't understand, which is why this didn't end up being a POW contender, because he got lost at the end.
He got in an argument and then drank too much?
He got in an argument, but I don't know why, because I don't know what happened.
I don't either.
Exactly. And there was the problem with it. I think that if this sounds at all good to you, you'll probably want to wait. I think, Connor, you'll read it when it comes out in trade someday.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, I noted that on the website. People asked why. It's because, you know, this book, Four Eyes, I don't enjoy it when an issue comes out every 6 months.
No, sure. But it still should be said that it's great. Like,
I have no doubt about it. I just rather read it all at once and I have to wait between chapters.
Mike, you want to take the next one?
Sure. Jess Turr, that's a capital T, he read Thor number 603. Wow, he loved this book. Story 5 out of 5 and art a 5 out of 5. And as of this recording, 2.8% of you chose that he's a pick of the week. He writes, I'm really going to miss J. Michael Straczynski on this comic very much. Boy, I've actually never heard that. Each issue has been great, and this one is no exception. I like how JMS uses Bill to portray the human perspective in the world of Asgard. The reader gets to see Asgard society through Bill's eyes. Also in this issue, Thor and Sif begin to adapt to life outside of Asgard as Sif adopts a dual identity to fit into the mortal realm. To bring the comic relief, we have Volstagg, Hogun, and Fandral, who chose to stay in Oklahoma and interact with the townsfolk. I gotta say, this is probably one of my favorite issues of the book so far. I thought the dialogue was great. I really enjoyed it. I thought the art was really terrific. What did you guys think of this? Oh, wow. Stunned silence.
No, I didn't.
Well, I liked it, Jester.
This is his last issue is the next one, right?
There's like a giant size one like they did with Old Man Logan, I think, from what I understand.
Who's been reading this book? Because I've been liking the Bill Little
Everybody
Romance.
But me and Connor.
I've read two of the what issue number? The 603 issues?
Yeah.
Is that how many we've done? however many issues there have been, I've read two of them.
Well, the thing is, I haven't been really liking this. I've actually liked every story except for the Thor story. I like the trio of the warriors. I like the dialogue. Can you guys make me remember when Loki became a guy again? When did that happen?
I thought he was a girl.
Okay, thank you. Gosh,
yeah, I don't know.
He's a guy now.
I think, Connor, I know that you didn't want to read this because you were protesting the abolishment of Thor speak.
Correct.
I think that you'd really like this.
I didn't like either one of the issues I read.
I know, but you read that weird one that was fucking around with Captain America, so I could see why. But yeah. I'm going to give you, because somebody gave me the first volume.
Six Gun sent you that.
Yeah. I'll give you that, and I want you to read that, and I'm curious what you think, because I think that you'll like it.
Maybe I'll do my posting on iFanboy, Thor, a second look.
Yeah.
Hey, try it. Do that.
And then they'll make you angry.
Then I'll have something to link to when people complain.
Where Thor goes and complains about how they can't fix the flooding in Katrina. Because that's how long ago it started.
Wow, that's when you got married.
Exactly.
Well, now you're getting divorced. You're not.
This is not a good time to jump into this story, just so anybody who's curious.
Not with the second to last issue?
Gee, thanks, Connor.
What?
No, I'm just saying.
That's a fact. I'm stating the fact. It's the second to last issue. Next issue is his last one. And then
who's going
to
be the new?
Then Kieran Gillen jumps on.
Oh, okay. Oh, really?
With art from Billy Tan.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Do you think this is one? Do you think that the Straczynski run as a whole has been one of the better Marvel stories?
Garbage.
Really?
I really did not say that or make a sound. Sorry, I don't like JMS, and I've read everything that I have recently within the past 8 years, and I don't want to get all controversial, but I just read Thor because I thought that's what we were supposed to be doing is read Thor, and I really haven't liked it until this issue, really. Okay. And it's because it's not Thor that he's talking about. It's everybody else. It's Dr. Doom and Loki. It's the three warriors and this guy Bill, and those stories have been kind of good, especially the Bill story. But I found it really disjointed, and I've not cared about it at all. But I just thought I was going to read it just because everybody else was reading it.
I'm quaking in fear right now.
I know. I'm sorry, guys. Well, people should tell me why they like them, because every time I read them, I'm like, I don't like it. I just don't even know what he's trying to do with the stories.
Is it preachy? That's why I don't like it.
It's just boring.
That too.
They're going to roast me.
It doesn't come out. Oh, yeah. You're in trouble.
I'm ducking.
Dude, I read the
12. You can't see it, but I'm under the desk.
I read that other stuff too. I'm not just spouting with number 603. I read all the other crap too. And, I say crap informedly.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I don't mean it. I'm sure he's very nice. I used to chat with him on CompuServe about the real Ghostbusters. And I'm not lying about that.
I'm going to read Rising Stars again sometime. And I think
Rising Stars was good.
That's what I'm going to do.
It was good.
But I read the 12 thing and then I got bored of that.
No,
and,
you didn't.
And
you read some of it.
You're right.
It turns out that was not Straczynski, by the way.
Really?
That's the reason it's not going on. It's because Weston had another project that he had to do that he'd started before, and then
But I feel bad. Just to close it out, I thought the art was really good. I actually really like this issue. I agree with the ratings. It'll be very interesting to see where they go with it. I've never been classic a Thor fan, so I don't know what to judge this with. That's all I'll just say.
If you like it or not? That's all that really matters.
Right. Well,
I take no joy.
What a wonderful time to segue into asking our viewers to help my fanboy. Those of you who haven't turned it off in disgust because we don't like your favorite writer, there's things that you can do to help out iFanboy if you still desire to do that, and you're a wonderful person if so, because you understand that people can have different opinions, and that's okay. Easiest thing you can do is when you go to iFanboy, there are banners on the site. Click on them. Patronize those businesses who are doing business with us, and that would help us out a lot. If you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, you can get through and you can buy anything you want at Amazon.com, and then we get credit for sending you there. So that's a really effortless thing that doesn't cost you anything that you can do. So anytime you want to go to Amazon, go through ifanboy.com/Amazon, and that would be very helpful. Of course, the other things that you can do is you can buy t-shirts from us. We sell t-shirts, people. You can get the Power and Responsibility Spider-Man t-shirt. And
no, the
oh Jesus, oh, guys, I don't know
what
I don't know. What came
Ron is gonna, we're fired. Ron's gonna come back and he's gonna fire us.
And the Herm t-shirt, which has something to do with, I believe, Charlton characters.
Yes.
The pre-order for that ends in October. We got some orders rolling in, and we're gonna order a very small amount of Herm shirts again so that they'll be available for you. Both of them are $15, and there's only a limited amount of them. You can help us by wearing, by buying, and by promoting that t-shirt. I love seeing pictures of those shirts on the web. Like, people will use them in their profile pictures and things like that. That's awesome. You can also become an iFanboy member. You've probably heard about this before. If you really like the show and you want to support what we do, there's an easy way to do it. You can become an iFanboy member. Go to ifanboy.com/store and sign up. You can do $4 a month or just $42 a year. That's the cost of one bad comic book a month, which I'm sure you all buy multiples of. And if you do that, you'll get an iFanboy prize pack, which has some buttons and some stickers. And it's a sticker and a random comic book. We're going to give you a comic book. It could be anything. And that's really the fun part. What comic am I getting?
Somebody just got a Batman and Robin sent out to them.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at that. Or you could, if you want to be a Gold Circle member, I just named it that, that's $10 a month or $100 a year, and that's going to get you the iFanboy prize pack that we just described, or an iFanboy member t-shirt, which is the black t-shirt. It says iFanboy member on it. And then all members, all of you, are eligible for the iFanboy giveaway. And the percentage is pretty good at this point.
Yeah. No, the giveaways have also been pretty damn good.
Oh, there's
it's
more.
It's not like – yeah.
There's more coming. We're going to tell you about those later. The other thing that you will get, if you remember, is our undying affection and appreciation. We cannot do this without you. Literally, you people are supporting iFanboy right now and making it possible. And thank you so much for that, because this means the world to us. And I know that we figured that if you're doing it, it means a lot to you. So thank you very, very much for all the members and anybody who's thinking about doing it.
I like to call them the champagne room level members.
Nice. There's no sex in the – anyway, emails.
first email's from Q, who says, I had noticed that after looking at the interior art in Batman and Robin number 4, the enthusiasm I had for the series dissipated. I find that this is primarily due to the hardwired high-standard bias of which Batman rendition I find is the greatest, e.g. Frank Quitely style or Kelly Jones. Do any of you fellows have a character who resonates with you with the right artist? If so, which character and what artist drawing it?
Ooh, I got one.
Okay.
Alex Maleev and Daredevil. You don't think that they're
I'm not disagreeing. I'm pondering.
No, go ahead.
Pondering. Because it's hard to discount Michael Lark's Daredevil.
Well, that's the thing. I was about to say, or Michael Lark, because I'm sort of wishy-washy that way. But okay. Well, you go.
Well, I think the friend, Alex Maleev leading into Michael Lark.
Yeah.
I find anyone else not doing Daredevil in that gritty style difficult. Like, when I saw the preview art for Andy Diggle's stuff, it was kind of like, all right, I'm not interested.
That was just for the list, though.
Right, I know. But even his regular series artist,
I think Chris Somney should be the Daredevil artist.
You're going to keep pushing Chris Somney on the world, and the world is just not going to accept.
He did that little tarantula story, I think, and it was fantastic. It was a really good sort of transition and that kind of thing, but also like a new look.
No, he's great. It's just he's, you know.
I hear you. You know
what? Who else?
I love John Romita Jr. on Thor.
Hmm.
That's where I started really reading a lot of Thor, and I think that it's like a neat style to do all that big. He does Marvel stuff great, and that huge Kirby Asgard background and the silly Asgardian outfits. He's great at those, and I love it.
I would actually say Frank Quitely's doing Damian.
Yeah, nice. Good one.
Like, he's so specifically a child, and a lot of artists have trouble with that. So everyone else seems to have just drawn him as a little man. So that's I say when anyone else draws Damian, it's difficult, except for the guy who did the is it the Blackest Night Batman mini? Mm-hmm. One of those he showed up at where he's been okay. But other than that, he just looks weird.
I actually like a couple came to mind is Jay Lee doing the Inhumans. Every time anybody else does the Inhumans, it doesn't look right. Good. And like it was just perfect when Jay Lee did it. And then Jim Chung doing any Avengers stuff.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Jim Chung can do Avengers every time. I'll wait 6 months an issue. I'll be fine with that.
I think that this is sort of easy one, but Tim Sale and Superman, he always seems to have a sense of humor and a certain take on.
He has no sense of humor.
He does.
Superman, not
Tim. But you know what I mean. No, but I mean Tim Sale has got a certain take on Superman, which is sort of timeless, and I think that it sort of resonates there.
Yeah, I'll give you that. So there's many answers.
There's people.
Nice work, people. Mudasir. I'm not pronouncing that correctly, says Watchmen is one of my favorite comics of all time and is considered one of the influential comic books of all time, yet I've yet to see its influence in any other book storytelling-wise. I'm gonna get through this. The nine-panel grid was integral to the Watchmen experience and is an economical and simple way to tell any type of story in the medium. That's wrong. It allows the creators to convey a vast amount of information without increasing the page count. The reason Moore was able to tell such a large story in such a small space was because of this as well. Yet the only other book I've read which uses this technique is Fell, and that never comes out. What other books are there that actually use it? Do you know the reason why it caught on?
Probably should be didn't catch on.
Yeah, it did not.
I think that you are mistaken, Mudasir, in a couple of ways. A, there's a lot more than the nine-panel grid that has made Watchmen influential, and it's everywhere.
It's every comic you're reading at this very moment.
Every single one.
Every the role of the media, the take on heroes, the realistic aspects of
deconstruction.
Yeah.
As far as the nine-panel grid, you know, it was a tool, and it's a tool that Dave Gibbons chose to use for the most part in the Watchmen to control the pace of that story and to control the feeling. And we were talking about earlier, we were talking with Fuso and G.I. Joe Cobra, is that it's a subdued feeling. I find that the nine-panel grid, for the most part, in modern comics, has that. It controls things. It keeps them slightly subdued. And I think it's used very well as a tool in that way. And when you see it pop up, what it usually does is it slows things down and it lets you put a microscope on the action and the things that are happening. But to do it in every page is quite a feat.
It would be 22 pages in a 5 minute time span if you did that, right? I mean, if the more panels per page, the closer we're examining time. And I would not read comics if they were all nine panel grids.
No, you wouldn't want to.
There would be no reason to do it.
Now, the other side is I don't want to read all comics that are the widescreen, you know, three horizontal panels.
It's a tool.
And the point is, you do the style that's appropriate for the story.
Exactly.
And sometimes it's a widescreen style, sometimes it's nine-panel style, sometimes it's a mix. The influence of Watchmen is not the aesthetic influence. It's the storytelling influence, which is not about the panels. It's about how the story was told.
There are techniques that Gibbons used that I'm sure that that are being used by – being stolen, and not in a bad way, by artists all over the place. But their job is to make you not know that they're doing it.
But the nice thing about the question is that we do get to sort of talk about the use of time in comics and how art reflects time passing. But, you know, the nine-panel grid is just – that's what they used for that story. And it made sense. It was the 80s, and it was just kind of like – it just worked in that frame.
It gives it that quiet feel through the whole thing, that thoughtful, like we're going through the motions of everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's not appropriate for everything now. But I definitely notice it when I see it. Like when you see – like Kirkman did a thing where he did all 16-panel grids for a whole issue in Invincible. You know, that had a different kind of feeling to it. So it's there. It's definitely out there.
Thank you, Mudasir and Q, for your emails. If you want to send us an email, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
You okay there?
Yes, that's me. And I'm good. I should have used that mute button because apparently when you use the mute button, it's funny every time.
Voicemail time. Let's hit the voicemail.
Hey, this is Jeff from Texas. I'm a big Luke Cage fan, and I was really excited whenever Brian Michael Bendis brought him into Alias, which is one of the reasons I started picking up the book, and then he came into New Avengers, and now he's a really big character in Marvel. Is there a character that you guys are a fan of, each one of y'all, that you think has a really cool backstory, or really cool powers, or you just always been a fan of them for some reason, but nobody's really used them in a big, big way yet? And if so, who is it, and who would you like to see, what writer would you like to see take a crack at him? And I know Luke Cage isn't really the best example, because Bendis always loved Luke Cage, and you don't know who these creators love and who they don't, but just, yeah. Who would you like to see take a crack at your favorite underused character?
I've been thinking about this, and I actually came up with an answer over the course of doing the show. One of them that first came up was Red Arrow, who is really interesting to me because he was Ollie's son for a while until he was sort of displaced by Ollie's son.
Right, his real son.
Yeah, Connor Hawke. And I just think, wouldn't it be cool to see another road trip book if somebody went in, why am I giving this away, of like Nightwing and Red Arrow? After
yes,
all this stuff, like that would be a great book, and I want to know the difference between Red Arrow and Nightwing because they can be written similarly. They're both sort of like hip young guys who can do it all and ride motorcycles and stuff like that.
And the ladies love them.
The ladies do love them. But that's one. Another one I really love is Patriot from Young Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that character is a well of possibilities and fascinating things because he's got all these opposing influences, I suppose.
I thought you were going to say thumbs. He's got all these opposing thumbs.
On the one hand,
he lifts things and do tools.
He's called Patriot. He's obviously very patriotic, but he's patriotic towards a country that has historically not done the best for him. And for black people, and then his grandfather specifically, and I love those things that are at the odds, and but he's built on a Captain America type of story, and he's really interesting in much the same way that Bucky is interesting, but totally different. So those are a couple.
Those are good ones.
Those are good ones.
There's not a ton of them because usually, they get characters are mined at some point.
Yeah, and I tend to follow writers, and the writers are the guys who do that. So it's always like, well, I like what they did with,
But those are good answers. So if you want to call us and ask us a question like that, you can call us at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Keep it short and sweet. Tell us what your name is and where you're from. That would be helpful.
Preferably comics-themed questions.
Yeah.
Here's a tip. We got giveaways, right?
Couple of announcements. The first announcement about the upcoming giveaways is October is giveaway month at iFanboy, and we'll be having three big giveaways in the last 3 weeks of the month. You can go head over to iFanboy.com, and you can see these giveaways. There's a post about them right at the top. It's a red post. It shows you what we're giving away, what show, and when. So if you want to win any of these prizes, you have to become an iFanboy member, and you have to do it by the Thursday before the show. So if you can go there and see what we're giving away, some big stuff, some DVDs, some trade paperbacks, a bunch of old comics. So go check it out at iFanboy.com. The other announcement is our special edition podcast for Superman Batman Public Enemies. The newest animated film is out. It's out behind this show. So you can check it out on the feed behind this one on iTunes or whatever aggregator you're using. Or you can go to iFanboy.com and you can directly download it there or stream it any way you want. But it's there and it's below this show. So check it out. The latest special edition podcast.
Awesome.
What'd you guys think? Can you give me a one word?
You'll
have to listen to the show, Mike. Go to iFanboy.com and stream it on the Flash Player.
I don't know why you think you're special.
A little preview. Just a nugget. All right.
It was animated.
It was. It featured voices you're familiar with. Check out iFanboy.com for the iFanboy Pick of the Week review that I wrote. And nice. More in-depth comic book discussion every single day with stuff from writers like Mike.
Yes.
He's a very enthusiastic writer, and I love how your personality comes across in your words. It's one of my favorite
things.
Thank
you, Josh.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Also, there's lots of other writers there, and check out the stuff. It comes out every weekday. There's great stuff, and it's so good. It impresses me every time. So get there. Go to ifanboy.com/about to see who we are and how you can connect with us on the web. Everyone who works on iFanboy has got a bunch of stuff in there. And the video show that we do, we've been putting up reruns. Reprints.
I think that's a really good idea, actually. I saw the one with Ron and his eye makeup, and I'm like, oh, I remember that show.
Exactly. We've been doing a lot of shows. There's no reason that, they can show reruns in the summer on other shows. But we are working on coming back. I've definitely got ideas already. I've been preparing. I didn't want to, but there it is. So that's going to be happening sometime soon.
We're finally going to do the Naked Show. Finally.
Tune in right now.
As I said before, you can email us at contact@fanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697 with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc.
I like concerns. I'm concerned that you guys don't like JMS.
What was that wet slap? Nothing.
I
like the show.
Oh, can't get clean.
Wet slap.
We'll never feel clean again.
Once again, if you like the show and the kind of things that we talk about, make sure you leave a review at iTunes about the show. It's a really good way to make sure that the show is seen and discovered by more people. You can leave it for the video show or for the audio show, or better yet, just tell people you know about it. Tell people at your comic book shop, tell your friends, anybody you think might enjoy the show. Help us spread the word. It's the best tool that we have is you. So that is the whole show. It's full.
Did you just call the listeners tools? Is that what you just did?
No.
They are tools.
Yeah.
They are not tools.
Especially that one guy. You know who you are.
Well, they're tools to make the show better. That's they right. are tools. They aren't
yeah,
tools.
Yeah, they do make the show better.
They do.
I'd like to clarify that. I take no joy in the Thor discussion.
Hey, no. No, seriously. We're just having a discussion.
I liked his Brave
Where's
and the Bold
Where's the mute
issue.
Button? I can't.
Don't let him talk anymore. Stop.
Why is that funny every time?
It's just funny. It's just funny. Fill in the blank. All right. So is that it for this week's show?
That's what it says there. That's the next
one. Yeah. I can do this reading.
You have to forget Mike's a professional.
My name is...
And I'm Mike.
You did that analog. I'm
I
Josh.
Did do that. It's got the, it's, my Josh.
Funny to us.
It's only going to be funny to us. In fact, I'd say you know what's good is when you start a sentence in the middle of it and then you just cut
you
it
know
off
what really pisses
going.
Me off about Ron? I hate it when he
–